Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy, Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome a first-time guest to the show, Gary South Shore Railcast broadcaster Andrew Mild. Andrew, thanks for joining Kevin and I tonight.
Hey, thanks guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
So we should tell fans out there that while we are recording the show, Andrew is multitasking, doing his fantasy baseball draft. So as we're going along during the show, he's going to tell us how well he's doing in this draft because he's third overall here. So we had the first pick. Who are you kind of leaning toward for your pick right there if he's available?
Well, I was leaning towards taking a second baseman because, you know, it's just a weak position to get any offensive productivity there. You know, for Mookie Betts, luckily for us, he can play three different positions. So he's off the board first. I took him with my first pick.
Oh, congratulations to that. We like that right off. Well, Andrew, I have to tell you that the interesting part of that, I'm going to give my little grievance here to start out with, because I didn't really see any announcement about you being the broadcaster this year. It just so happened that I looked on the team's website and saw your name listed as that. And I'm wondering, why isn't the team hyping up the fact that they have this brand new great broadcaster for the team?
I think we got to take it up with Dion Witherspoon, who took over marketing. He joined right after, but I really do appreciate the kind words. I guess I'll have to give you our GM's number after, and you can tell him, like, hey, you got to hype up Andrew. Come on, let's figure this out.
That's what I'm talking about. So how do we wind up in the Railcast?
Your own story.
Go ahead, Kevin. I mean, ask that again.
My question is: I mean, do you have the keys or the password or something? Or write your own story and just, you know, make your own press release. Just that way, you can glorify it as much as you want.
Yeah, the thing is I grew up in Northwest Indiana as a Bears fan. And as a Bears fan, there's a quote that you learn from Walter Payton, and it is, if you're good at something, you tell people, but if you're great at something, people tell you. So I don't like to brag about what I've done and where I'm going and stuff. So I let people listen to me, and then they can decide.
Oh, you can make up a whole bunch of stuff. You could say that, like, you in between innings, you saved a fan from choking on a hot dog and saved a cat from a tree outside the ballpark. I mean, there's a lot of places you could go with that.
Yeah, honestly, I do have the password. Might have to throw, like, an April Fool's one in there. That's coming up soon, right? Like, next week?
I'll tell you what, guys.
On the ballpark, saving everyone.
And Rob would know this, and I think it is still up in the St. Paul Saints website. Read Sean Aaronson's bio, and you will laugh your head off. It is just beyond belief.
But what was the April Fool's joke that the Mets did? That they got some guy from, like, Alaska that could throw, like, 150 or whatever, and it was them and baseball and Sports Illustrated. I don't remember the name of the player, but this was, you know, way before my time.
Sid Finch was the made-up player.
Yeah. Yes. Everyone, like, wanted to get a peek at him throwing this 105 mile per hour heater. It was. I wish I was around to see that.
That was the inspiration. I did a blog. I don't remember what year it was, but on April 1st, I did a blog saying that I was the new media relations director for a brand new collegiate summer team called the Silver Bay Shoremen. And I used, like, the first letter of every paragraph would spell April Fool's Day. And nobody caught on to that. But I was getting all these congratulations on the new job. Even my own mom called, said, well, I heard you're moving up north of Duluth. So after that, I retired from April Fool's jokes. I couldn't top it.
That's especially when it flies past everyone's head.
Well, Andrew, tell us a little bit about how you wind up becoming the broadcaster for the Railcast.
Yeah, so uh, I I'm from Northwest Indiana, as I mentioned earlier, and actually got to take a draft pick right now. Lean towards pitching. Who are we thinking? Let's go with Luis Castillo. Anyway, so I'm from the area, and I grew up going to Railcats games, and I drive past the stadium all the time when you're going towards Chicago. So, you know, I drive past it, and I loved the team. I loved going to games as a kid. It was so much fun. I had maybe like 3 or 4 signed baseballs from Rusty because I was too afraid to ask the players for autographs. But I told my family when I was working with the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs in the Atlantic League that if the job in Gary opened up, I would apply for it and see if I could come home. Well, I spoke with Anthony, the GM, had one interview, and he called me and offered the job. And what I did is I kept it a secret because I was on my way home for Christmas. So I got home, and sure enough, I had to wait for the surprise because my mom was out getting her hair done. So then she comes in, and I handed my phone to my sister, and it was the offer letter that I had received from the Cats. And, you know, that was, you know, probably the best Christmas present I could have been giving them is coming home for good. And now they're stuck with me.
Man, that's fantastic. Man, so you've been in that job since December, and we're just knowing about it now.
Yeah, I officially started in January. I came back home, and everything worked out. And I'm full-time. I've been doing sales for them and writing up the press releases and just getting ready for the season. I just can't wait, especially when we're on Baseball Eve.
Well, that's fantastic. Is baseball your first passion then in terms of broadcasting?
Oh, yeah. I grew up going to Cubs games, and more recently I've been going to Sox games because I don't know how this all worked out, but a lot of my friends are Sox fans. I just want to go to a baseball game, and you know, my grandfather was the president of the Crown Point Babe Ruth out here, so I was always helping him in the summertime. And so it all started was about 12 years old, and was listening to Pat Hughes call a game. And I said, you know, that would be really cool to travel and talk about baseball and enjoy these beautiful summer days. Problem was, guys, is that I am naturally introverted. It may not sound like it, but I am. So I had to get over that shyness. But what I started to do is I partnered up with the broadcaster for the Memphis Redbirds, Alex Coyle, did games together. And we used a $50 camera and a $50 mic, and that's how we got our reps in, especially at that young age. And then going forward, it helped me out with the jobs that I've had.
Well, that's pretty remarkable. So you're talking about a little bit about Southern Maryland. So you were in the Atlantic League broadcasting there some?
Yeah, so that was my first job right out of college. I graduated from their university, sports media degree, and I went out there and I loved it. Like, the guys are awesome. Coincidentally, full-time hits leader for the Railcats in joining the American Association, Alex Crosby, was on the team. He and him would talk about the Railcats here and there since he knew I was a fan of the club. And I miss them tremendously out there. Like, I didn't want to leave, but you know, you can't really beat home and seeing your family every day, and your friends too. Because for a while there, I didn't get to come home for 10 months, considering I was going on the road. And then when I was home back in Maryland, it was homestands. They play 126 games, so they're 6 games longer than the American Association.
You grew up knowing about the Railcats then, had a lot of involvement then with the organization. So did you have some personal highlights about watching games or things that just stood out to you as you were growing up, related to the Railcats, that is, of course?
You know, there was a game, I'll always remember this, my favorite games I've ever been to. It was Father's Day. We took my dad to a Railcats game, and we had great seats. It was a sunny day, but the sun set behind then we got shade on us, and they had fireworks going on that day. Railcats won on a walk-off single to right field. For who they were playing, for an extras, but I remember thinking, like, that was the day. Family, watching the Railcats and seeing them get a walk-off win before some fireworks.
Very nice. Fantastic. As you look forward to this job this season, what kind of things should we expect out of an Andrew Mile call? What kind of broadcast do you like to present?
Me crazy when I hear a boring broadcaster. I've been told again and again that sometimes I get too excited. Well, I am. The thing about the fans is that they can see through that when you're being fake and not being your true self. I think the broadcaster should be the number one fan. You should be excited as the fans. You have to get down. Like, your home run call for the Railcats should not be the same as the home run for the other team. Cowhide Joyride is?
I don't think so, no.
So it's a fun. This big baseball dictionary I'll flip through every once in a while and flipping through it. Cowhide Joyride, which is a term for a home run in my life. The internet trying to find someone this and no one did. Played with it, toyed with it. They all came out as the home run catchphrase is let's go on a cowhide joyride.
Okay.
Represents me perfectly, where it's a little bit of excitement, a little bit quirky. Fans to have a great time. I want them to learn something. Three things done during the 9 innings, well spent.
I like that. That's pretty cool. Excellent. You know, you were talking about you're going by listening to some broadcasts. You thought that would be a great thing for me to do. So do you go to college expecting, I'm going to be a broadcaster one day? And then how do you get yourself into Southern Maryland to make that a dream come true?
What's funny is I started college going to a school called Manchester University. It's a smaller D3 school not far away. And they said, hey, you can come and be a broadcaster for our thing called Spartan Stream. So that's where it started. And then, you know, COVID happened and their resources kind of dwindled on broadcasting. And I understand that they were taking precautionary measures. But my dream school was always Butler. So I met a few people from there and realized they had a sports media department. And as a senior, I started my Butler career. And I talked to the professor. His name is Nick White. And, you know, he's still a good friend of mine. And we'll still, every once in a while, chat back and forth. But, you know, I got there and I told him, I was like, hey, I want to broadcast. And this is what I've done. I interned with the Windy City Thunderbolts in the Frontier League last year. So when baseball season came around and they got this brand new production truck, they started throwing me on there because I was the only one that had any experience. And it worked out because I did that, and then I worked collegiately for a team called the Lake County Corn Dogs that's also based out of Crown Point. So I'm gaining all this experience, but I'm making it exciting and making myself stand out from other broadcasters. And that's something they tell you at these sports forums is how can you be unique than everybody else? Because a lot of people are coming after your job. How are you going to reside with somebody? And I interviewed the Blue Crabs a few times. And, you know, this was a very nervous time because I wanted to make sure I had a broadcasting job. And I got the job. I moved out there, and it was phenomenal. I met some really cool people. I have a really fun story about me meeting Rajay Davis as a Cubs fan. And I got to go to some really cool ballparks up and down the East Coast.
So what's that fun story? You can't leave us on a cliffhanger like that.
Yeah, so, right. Well, I wanted to see if you guys wanted to know about it. So, as I said, I'm a huge Cubs fan. Die hard. I bleed red, white, and blue. There's a good chance I could name you everyone in the starting lineup of Game 7 of the 2016 World Series. So, for people who may not know, Rajay Davis hit a clutch home run against Aroldis Chapman to tie up the game in the eighth inning in probably the biggest game in recent history for baseball. And Rajay Davis' belt killed me. He did that. I had friends calling me, texting me, making sure I was alive. I didn't really feel like it, but I knew there was still more baseball to be played. But so I'm in Maryland, and our batting cages is beyond our left field wall. So I'm standing out there, and I'm talking to one of our players. His name's Matt Hibbert, actually former Railcat, and he's been recovering from a back injury. So I'm just trying to get an update from him, what's going on, and when should we expect him back. And as I'm talking to him, a guy walks by. I look at the guy, and I look back at Hibby. I said, Hibby, is that Rajay Davis? And he goes, I think it was. Sure enough, he comes walking back, and it's 100% Rajay Davis. So he stops, and I go over to introduce myself. I extend my hand, and I said, hey, my name's Andrew. I'm the broadcaster for the team. It's really nice to meet you. And he goes, oh, hi, my name's Rajay. I respond with, oh, I know, I'm a Cubs fan. And he got the biggest kick out of it. He is the nicest guy. And I told him, I told you guys, I said, my friends had to call me to make sure that you didn't kill me during that game. And I think you might get that a lot from Cubs fans, but he was such a class act about it. I just love telling that story. Just to see that like these guys, that they are more than just baseball players, that they are human.
Oh, yes.
Now, there have been some rather lean years here in Cary over the last few years. And have you had a chance to spend a little time with Lamar Rogers and talk about, you know, what he sees for the vision of the team and what your thoughts on what the Railcats will look like in 2024?
You know, I just met Lamar yesterday. And guys, there's actually going to be a interview with me and Lamar coming out by the end of the week. And you can hear what he has to say about it. But, you know, I'm seeing these guys come in, and I get this question a lot from people that know that I work for the team. And I just tell them, like, Lamar has been putting in some work. He has brought in some guys that have potential to be good, that maybe all they need is just a new scene. And that could be the Gary Railcats and being coached by Lamar, who has a lot of experience with the Astros, who are great at developing players. And they just brought in Franklin Perez, former number one prospect for the Detroit Tigers. That was the centerpiece of that trade that sent Justin Verlander to Houston, and former major leaguers on the team. So it's an older group. When Lamar was explaining it to me, he said, when I got the team, you're a much younger, a lot of rookie ball guys. He's like, when you see teams that win, they're much older. Triple A guys, double A, some big leaguers. He said that for us to compete, we're to bring in some experience. And guys, he has. And I'm really impressed with what he has done. It's only going to his third year as manager of the team. And he has high hopes that this is going to be the year that the Railcats flip the script. Because for me, I was born in 99. I'm 24 years old. So I was, you know, I'm pretty young when the Railcats were winning Northern League championships. And then when they won that AA title in 2013, I think Lamar has set the bar that he can bring another title back to the South Shore.
Now, the Railcats have been a team that traditionally, as you've mentioned, we're a younger kind of team and use speed and great fundamentals, young pitchers to, you know, go on every fourth day and really work that bullpen. As you've got to see this team from the younger days to where they're at right now, do you feel like the makeup of this club is going to look different? Is this going to be a more powerful team? What are your thoughts about how this team looks for the season?
Yeah, I think that Lamar has gotten away from, you saw some speedsters, but I don't think it has many as the Railcats have had before. They have this big guy. You have to be on the lookout for him. His name's Carlos Rincon. He is a big guy that was in the Mets organization for a while, started off with the Dodgers. He has killer bat speed. And I think Lamar is not afraid to bring in these power guys because, yeah, we're going to play 50 games at home, but these other 50 games, there are going to be some smaller ballparks. We're going to be going to Cleburne. We're going to be going to the Birdcage. We need some guys that are going to lift the ball and hit it out of the yard, because that's modern-day baseball. That's just how it is. It's all about launch angle, exit velocity. Nobody wants to do the small ball anymore, because that's what analytics tells you. Hey, hang down a bunt sounds great, but it's not exactly what we're looking for here. It's a lot easier to hit a two-run bomb and save some outs.
He has really come up with to be honest with you, I thought the way that this team was built the last couple seasons, that they were going to be unbelievably competitive, and then struggled a little bit. As you've had some chances to talk with Lamar, and you said, you know, kind of in this interview process, how much pressure does he feel at this point? You know, because I thought really he came with a lot of hype around him, well-deserved, intelligent guy, very good manager. Is there pressure for him, do you think, to make a winner out of this club?
I don't think there's any pressure on Lamar, and if there is, he is not feeling it, guys. When I was talking with him, he was smiling, and he said he's been going out there networking and making sure that he's got the right guys this season, and I truthfully believe that he has the guys that can bring a winner back to Gary, and I think that Lamar, as he has gone through these first 2 years, has gone through a lot of trial and error. But now that he's settling into his third year, he's found his groove as a manager, and that these guys are going to be the guys that he can build around for years to come and get them back to the playoffs.
You know, I like what you just said there, too, because I was thinking it as you guys were discussing it, that sometimes it does take a manager coming into this league a couple years to kind of get a feel for the area a bit, and then year three is when you have to make a statement or the pressure starts building. So, yeah, I think you're very accurate on that.
And that's the thing is, a lot of guys want to play Lamar. He was telling me that he signed Franklin Perez, and then I had to figure out that Lamar's managing out in Gary, and they go, hey, we want to go to Gary with him. And now more guys are discovering Lamar's out there, and I think that when you have a rookie manager, players are a little bit lenient toward experienced managers that have success and have gotten guys in the minor leagues. And now that Lamar can prove that he can do that himself and that he has confidence in himself and in the organization, I see more guys wanting to come back and wear the green and maroon.
Some great rivalries in that area, you know, with all those teams so close, King County, Chicago, you guys, Milwaukee, there's Lake Country, got a lot of great rivalries around there. So do you feed in those rivalries, like you going to Chicago and putting ketchup on a hot dog or anything to really kind of feed that kind of stuff?
Like, and here's the thing, guys, I can do it. I can't put ketchup on a hot dog. It's just, it's wrong. To the south side, so there's a restaurant out there that if you put ketchup on a hot dog, you have a ring a bell, so everyone in the restaurant knows ketchup on a hot dog. I think that Bree's friendly, because I know the Railcast have struggled against Chicago. I think is a really good stick for the Railcast to see where they're at. The team just came off a championship run where they fell just short to one of the best teams in independent baseball last year, looking at the Kansas City Monarchs. And the Illinois rivalries are a real deal. Illinois looks at us like we're the little brothers. I don't think that's the case, guys.
Well, we hope not. Do you got to know some of the other broadcasters, reach out to them and learn a little bit about what they've got going on and kind of build that brotherhood there?
Yes. Broadcaster for Chicago, never got to meet him. Go work me, and I thought he'd been a reach out to. But I've talked to some of the broadcasters through a big meeting that we have. Not anything else beyond that. We get closer to the season, and I'm doing everything that I should be doing, and that the broadcasters that come in are getting the things that they need.
That makes sense. Makes perfect sense. Well, Andrew, Kevin and I want to really thank you for joining us here tonight. You're a first-time guest, so you may not know this, but we always give our guests a chance to give us a final thought. So whatever you would like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Oh, man, a lot of pressure here. I know you before we got into this, we were talking about stuff that we like to talk about where we're passionate about. First things first. Bear down. Let's go Chicago Bears. They've had a great offseason. I'm really proud of them. Hopefully they turn it around. I'm kind of sick of losing to those team from Wisconsin. I can't even say their name. But a big shout-out to everyone that might be listening from the state of Indiana. Us Hoosiers are tough, resilient people, and I think that this Railcats group is a group that they can get behind because they're tough and resilient, and they're playing for the love of the game. And I think that's a lot of what Indiana has. We have a lot of passion, and we have a lot of love for things. I know that we think Indiana, people think, hey, corn and basketball. It's corn and baseball in the summertime. So I'm hoping that we see a lot of people come out to games this year and see a really good product on the field, because Lamar and Anthony and everyone in that front office have been working really hard. Shout out to them. And shout out to everyone else that has helped me along the way. And big shout out to Rusty, the mascot. He's the hardest working person we have.
I like it. Andrew Mild, thanks for joining Kevin and I today.
For doing this.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, guys.
Well, Kevin, great having Andrew Mild on here tonight. We always like to talk to the broadcasters and learn a little bit about them.
Yes, I am, very enthusiastic, and pretty neat story that he got away from home to get his professional broadcasting feet wet, and now he gets to come home and broadcast for his hometown team. Not often a guy gets a chance to do that, so good on him, and can't wait to hear him call some games.
Yeah, absolutely, and good luck to Ryan Zimmerman out there, because we really liked having Ryan on, and he did a great job there, and Gary, and we know Andrew will do well. It's interesting to hear him talk about changes Lamar Rogers is looking to make here, because I think both of us agree that if this team doesn't start going older and more veteran experience, they're not going to compete in that East Division.
And it seemed like he was leaning towards that a bit last year. Not so much in the first year because he pretty much inherited Greg Taggart's team, but last year it seemed like he was going for those guys that did have a bit of experience in affiliated baseball. So now I think, as we were saying on when we were on with him, that gradually he's seen what it takes to win in this league. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of a roster Lamar can put together.
We like it because that East Division was already pretty brutal last year in terms of how close all the teams were, and now it looks like it might even be stronger. So it should make for a fun East Division race this year, for sure. Kevin, too, I think that it seems like the West is always the big brother of the American Association, using Andrew's metaphor there, and the East was always kind of the lesser division, I guess, which is just in terms, but man, that East looks like they could be very brutal this year.
Well, let's take a look at it. Look where the championships come from the last few years. It's Kansas City twice and then Fargo once. So,
yeah,
you can't argue with that mentality until someone proves them wrong.
That's why Kevin Luke was on the show, for that great insight like that. And spot on insights, as a matter of fact.
Kevin, let's have to do this week, so that'd be the other reason I'd be on.
Let's jump around transactions that went around during this week. Cleburne signs infielder Cito Culver and right-handed pitcher Chris Muller. I believe that Culver played for Sioux Falls a couple of years ago. One of those great kind of utility guys that the team can count on, and Man, every day when I look at the Pete and Cavilla transactions, I think to myself, wow, this team could really be something. So if the East isn't bad enough, Wow. What were you saying, Kevin?
That Cito Culver does sound familiar. I can't exactly place the team, but he does sound like someone that we've may have talked about at one time.
Okay, yeah, I thought that was true. The Lincoln Salt Dogs re-signed catcher Luke Roskam. Then have infielder Gavin Johns and Adam Scoggins signed with the club there. Left-handed pitcher Adam Scoggins, or Scoggins, I guess it could be too. Roskam became a big star with Lincoln last season, arguably after Ryan Lidge, probably the second best catcher in the league. And that's saying a lot because there were a lot of very good catchers in this league last year. But he's got a big bat, and Lincoln's going to need that big bat this year.
I mean, just an incredible second half of the season. You know, he was just kind of a run-in-the-middle of the catcher to start the year with. But, boy, he just got red hot, it seemed like, come around July 1st and got on quite a roll.
They also signed right-handed pitcher Jack Parisi. So we should say Sioux City transfers the contract of Kyle Bloor, I believe that is, to the Minnesota Twins organization. I believe that is the first guy sent already to a major league affiliate. I'm looking back through this list here, but I think that that's 100% true, Kevin, and I'm going to go with it that it is from what I'm looking right here. So congratulations to him, and I don't think when we see a quality arm go to from the Sioux City Explorers, we're the least bit surprised by that.
A poor guy. I mean, he didn't even get to. Maybe Steve Montgomery sent him a Sioux City Explorers cap so he'd have at least some sort of souvenir of his. And I'm using air quotes on as we're recording on audio. Time in Sioux City. I'm good at that, Rob.
Yeah, that
I'm really good at doing visual stuff and trying to explain it. I was just thinking about this today at work on how last year when I was doing color with Brad Allred in the game in Sioux Falls, and we're only on MixLR, and I'm trying to get play-by-play of a guy that was passed out in the berm, and we're like, I just got to realize, you know, folks, I know this isn't making for good radio right now. So, anyways, now we're totally off track.
I like it. I like it a lot. I missed a couple there. Right-handed pitcher Christian Scott signed from Cleburne as well, and I missed to say that catcher Max Hewitt also signed with the Lincoln Salt Dogs. Okay, so excuse me for that mistake. Sioux Falls re-signed outfielder Hunter Clannon. Kevin, a guy who just we've seen grow from the very first time. Former Wichita Wingnut, should tell you how long he's been around the American Association, starting in 2018. But a guy who's just gotten better, figured out a way to improve his game every year, just really never got a chance at affiliate ball, but has been a big-time performer in this league.
And has the most hardcore grandma for a fan, too, with the Grandma Clannon. So Tanner Hoops knows that Grandma Clannon will be listening in every night this season.
That's what we like to talk about. We should have Hunter on the show. We're going to have to work for that for next week. Milwaukee signs right-handed pitcher Victor Vargas. They add, I think there was one other. Yeah, there were. They acquired Rodrigo Benoit, I think is what we were at, on loan from Durango and signed him. Benoit was the guy who was closing out games in that run to the championship series a couple years ago, Kevin. Faltered a little bit early last year. Didn't really fit the mold that they had, but, you know, this guy's got a real live arm and was unreal a couple seasons ago. So just another great bullpen arm down there for that Milwaukee Milkman team.
And plus it's a bonus when you get a guy that you do have a history with and, you know, there's no awkward having to meet your coaches and managers type of situation. You just hop right in and do your job.
Absolutely. The Kansas City Monarchs signed left-handed pitcher Carlos Garcia. There's always got to be a somebody, Carlos E. something or other, in the Kansas City system. It just always seems to be that way. Right-handed pitcher Zach Lebon and right-handed pitcher Alex Valdez returning, Kevin. Now, 2 years ago, he was the guy who was closing out games for them down the stretch, was great in the regular season, struggled in that playoff series against Fargo. Then last year had kind of a different role with the team, was more the setup guy, never really got back into the closer's role. But he's got a real live arm too and a young guy. So I could see him getting back into the mix for that number nine spot in the pitching staff there.
I keep waiting for the bombs to start dropping from Kansas City of all these MLB vets coming in. It's been, by Kansas City standards, a pretty underwhelming off season so far.
You're right about that. They usually have, I mean, this is a pretty full roster, we should say, too. You know, I mean, you know, there's no denying that Joe will come up with, you know, he always has some late guys that come in there. But I think right now, and I'm going to pull this up here for a minute while I'm looking at it, but I think that they have, what, 3, 6, 9, 10? So 15, 16, 17 guys on this roster already. And I don't think there's very many major leaguers, if there is any former major leaguers at all. It usually seems like he's got like 8 of them. Which point, but
as it's been talked about in the off season, right now the money is just too enticing down in Mexico for these guys, and I think we're gonna. I believe it was Steve Montgomery I was talking about. Right? I think we're gonna see a younger league this year, and maybe that's maybe getting guys that have been double A, triple A. Maybe that's gonna be your high point as far as getting veteran names in. Of course, by the time we air this, we'll probably hear about Yan Hernandez signing and Prince Herman coming back, and we'll have a totally outdated show.
It always does seem, but we moved to Tuesday just for the last few weeks because it always seemed they wanted to drop the Tuesday bombshell on us after the show came out. But hopefully, that we didn't miss anything this week when that comes. So, Lake Country. Signed right-handed pitcher Brady Puckett. Not related to Kirby Puckett in any way, Dino.
On less tee.
That's what I'm talking about. And also signs right-handed pitcher Alan Zhang Carter to the team there. And I believe that is all. I'm going to check real quick. That's all of the transactions in the league. And it is. I got to say, I congratulations to Kyle again on being signed by the Twins organization. But wow, March 22nd, that it seems like we always have like 4 or 5 guys before spring training that got signed by somebody, but not this year. So maybe major league organizations are being a little thriftier about who they're going out to get, which I think is a good and a bad thing. But I hope that leads to lots of releases here pretty soon so we can get deeper rosters. So,
well, I would think so. I wish you got. Major League season, I believe, starting either tomorrow or Friday, and the same with AAA. So you have to assume AA, Single A, they're probably maybe a week or so from now. So, you know, the Major League Baseball and its affiliates, their seasons just kind of snuck up on us.
Yeah.
I have not watched any baseball this whole spring. I don't know about you.
No, I have not. I, you know, you and I have talked about this a bunch on the show, so for those who have heard this probably 50 times from me, my apologies, but I've gotten so much into American Association and even looking at, like, Frontier and Atlantic League that I don't even care about the Major League level, unless it's somebody you and I know, you know, like a former American Association guy moves up, and especially if we've come across that guy in particular, then I go to pay attention, but... I still I'm an old guy still, Kevin, and I don't like that season's not beginning in April. I think March is still too early. So that's my complaint.
Yeah, it's a little too early. I mean, it messes around with the playoff run and the NCAA tournament. So yeah,
right.
It just feels a little intrusive.
I completely agree. And I always liked that in like the first week of April, you always had Major League Baseball began, the Final Four was ending in basketball, and hockey playoffs used to begin at the beginning of April. So in like a 6 or 7 day period of time, you had all this super cool stuff. And if you liked golf too, then the Masters was around that time too. And then you had that. So it was a great time in sports. And now they've protracted out the length of things, and it's not as much fun anymore. So. That's my complaint. The Frontier League doesn't have any major news that's going on right now. A lot of signings going on, none of them touching the American Association from guys that we formerly know. And we're in the same boat with the Atlantic League, with the exception of left-handed pitcher Brian Worsenick, who was pitching last year with the Chicago Dogs. He was signed by the Staten Island Fairy Hawks. And I'm thinking, like, the Atlantic League is probably 2 weeks away from getting underway here, I think. I'm going to see if I know what I'm talking about here.
Crank things up.
Yeah, because they're 120-game schedule or something, so I got to believe they're pretty close. Nobody's got a schedule up for them, though, so that's sad. So I don't have an exact answer for that, but I'm pretty sure they're getting pretty close. I mean, I'm pretty sure. I know I'm sure that they are getting pretty close. So I'm going to see if I can find an exact date. Like, if I'm on April 19th, do we have games on April 19th? No. Do we have games on April 27th? No. No. Okay, well, then I got nothing. So my apologies, but they got to begin in April. I'm going with it anyway. I'm believing that. Kevin, how about some shout-outs this week?
My shout-out, and folks, you're going to, once again, I'm trying to be visual on a audio podcast. My shout-out is going to go to a gentleman on Saturday attending the National Collegiate Hockey Conference Championship game at XL Energy Center, who he may have been at the Minnesota Wild game earlier that afternoon, and the day had caught up to him, and he fell asleep, and everybody in the crowd saw it, and fell asleep hard enough, but he was wise enough in his pass-outedness to provide a flat surface for another fan to stack a popcorn pail with a mini donut pail stacked on top of that, and six empty tall boys of beer were all stacked on his head by another fan, and he was able to provide enough of a flat surface in order for this visual monstrosity to happen. If you go on my Twitter account at @drkevinluco, I posted a picture of it that someone else had posted last Saturday. It was an incredible sight. My only drawback, though, is the guy was wearing leggings, and I don't know anywhere where that is fashion right now. Correct me if I'm wrong, but no, guys should not wear leggings in public unless you have shorts over them or are taking batting practice.
This picture is amazing. I'm laughing there. I'm sorry. I went out to Kevin's Twitter page and look at that. That is really something. So, and everybody's got pictures of it. They're all there. I mean, you got to be really sacked out at this point.
When he finally did wake up, I think it was the loudest ovation of the evening.
That's beautiful. I like it a lot. I absolutely like that. Let's see. My shout out for the week. How about who should we shout out? I can't piggyback on you anymore because you're getting mad at me about doing that. I'm going to choose something better. So my piggyback of the so I'm, my shout out for the week is going to go. Although they lost to Alabama, my alma mater for my master's degree, Grand Canyon University, did win their first round matchup in the NCAA tournament. And we're actually leading Alabama late into that contest, but just didn't have enough to hold off the tide. So great run out there, because I don't think Grand Canyon has really been in an NCAA tournament in quite a while. Maybe never, to be honest with you. So shout out to them. Great effort out there. You did us alumni proud. So thank you. And that's my thing for tonight, I think.
There you go.
Well, Kevin, I think that wraps us up for tonight. So Kevin and I want to thank Andrew Mild for joining us here tonight. Congratulations to him, even though we had to wait 2 months to hear about it. But congratulations to him about being the Gary South Shore Rhino Cats broadcaster. So for Kevin Loco, I'm Rob Pannier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.